ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
this morning, text number 19.
Naitach
chitram
tvai
shatar
varanayana viryaje krihito ananya bhavena चित्रं परीक्षत वारणायन वीर्यजे गृहीतो धन्यभावेन यत्त्वया हरिरीश्वरः तच्चित्रं परीक्षत वरणायन वीर्यजे गृहीतो नन्यभावेन यत्त्वया
हरिरीश्वरः
तच्चित्रं परीक्षत वरणायन वीर्यजे
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada's purport. The value of great parentage and noble birth is evaluated here in connection with the birth of Vidura. The culture of a human being begins when the father invests his semen. Invests in the sense of put into. Invests his semen in the womb of the mother. According to his status of work, a living entity is placed in a particular father's semen. And because Vidura was not an ordinary living entity, he was given the chance to be born from the semen of Vyasa. The birth of a human being is a great science, and therefore reformation of the act of impregnation according to the Vedic ritual called Garbhadhana Samskara is very important for generating good population. The problem is not to check the growth of the population, but to generate good population on the level of Vidura, Vyasa, and Maitreya. There's no need to check the growth of population if the children are born as human beings with all precautions regarding their birth. So-called birth control is not only vicious, but also useless. Va Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Uttale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Srivari Pascharcha Deve Sutane Umagyanam Timodam Dasya Manjana Shrataya Chaksu Dhu Nirikim Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Dubhyas Chakritva Sindhu Vyeva Chapatita Nam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. O Vidura, it is not at all wonderful that you have so accepted the Lord without deviation of thought. Grihito ananya bhava. That you have taken the Lord and your existence doesn't go anywhere else, or your feelings don't go anywhere else. Ananya bhava. Ananya bhava. Your whole mentality and mood is directed toward Krishna. For you were born from the semen of Vyasadeva. It's a little amusing here that Prabhupada talks about the value of great parentage and noble birth in relation with Vidura, because famously he was a Shudra. I think Prabhupada does this deliberately, so we should understand what is meant by great parentage and noble birth. Otherwise, people have great parentage and noble birth by the same system that we use for dogs and horses. But here is something more than that, because the birth of Vidura, you must know the story, how since the king was not able to have sons, so Vyasadeva was called in to substitute for him. This was done, as you know, in previous times, that if a man couldn't have a child, then his brother would be getting a child. This also, you see this in the Old Testament times in the Bible. This was generally a custom. So Vyasadeva was a renowned sage, was therefore to beget children. But Vyasadeva is apparently not physically very attractive. And so one of the queens having sexual union with him was so disgusted that he was not some movie star. She became physically ill, and because of her quality of being physically ill at the time of conception, the child was more sickly. That was Pandit. And another one, couldn't stand to look at it, kept her eyes closed, so the child, Jitarashtra, was born blind. Still, in their way, a very powerful person, because the father was Vyasadeva. The third one was not a queen, but the maidservant of a queen. They would also have children from the king in those days. So the maidservant, although Shudra by definition, by birth, nevertheless, was humble, and I wanted to be able to bear a child by Vyasadeva. So her mentality was actually very favorable and devotional, so that Vidura took birth here. As we know, Vidura is actually an incarnation of Yamaraj, and there was some curse by Mandukuni that he would take birth as a Shudra. And so, although because of his mother, so therefore he was always meant that he was a Shudra. He was brought up in the royal family, and but because of his birth, he could not inherit. He was somewhat of an outsider. And this was used against him by his nephews, the sons of Dhritarashtra, who was born blind. They brought up this fact. Nevertheless, Vaidura was, as I said, because of the quality of the parents, the mentality at the time of birth, the whole object of having sex was not for recreation, but for begetting necessary children. And so, this is the proper use of sex. And so, in this way, when everything was proper, Vidura was not an ordinary living entity. Because he was not an ordinary living entity, he was given the chance to be born from the semen of Vyas. Prabhupada says here, therefore, according to his status of work, meaning his previous activities of a previous birth, one takes a living entity as placed in a particular father's semen. One is going to take birth again in a human form of life. Therefore, where he goes is determined by his previous activities. And so, a person with very good karma or even a spiritual heritage in the previous life, as Prabhupada mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita chapter, Krishna mentions it in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, will take birth in a family of great devotees. So because of that previous work, either good karma or devotional work, becomes attracted to a particular father and mother and takes birth accordingly. So this is, Prabhupada says here, tells us, the culture of a human being. Sometimes the English word culture is like the German word Bildung, you know, for the whole formation of human character. So when does this begin? Not even in childhood, in the crib, or in the playpen, but before then, at the time of conception. And Prabhupada, in an interesting way, uses this word invests his semen. Usually we use invest as a financial term, when you put money into something, in a project, so that your money will grow. Huh? You invest it, is what it means. But the literal meaning of the English word invest is to put in. So Prabhupada said, invest is semen. In other words, that this is being done, Prabhupada is saying, in a somewhat subtle way, as something to produce something very good in the future. Because the opposite of invest is waste. And so semen should not be, Prabhupada says many times, wasted. So it should be invested. So how to make that investment? The investment in the future is the children. It's also, so where does this begin? Actually, at the time of conception. So then Prabhupada says, the birth of a human being is a great science. It is a science. We should think about this for a minute, because it's not just something that's, if it's a science, Science means a deliberate process by which you'll produce a good offspring. That's what it's meant. Science means you know how to do it. So if you do it properly, you will get very good children, high quality children. That's the science. Vedic science, we can contrast this, what another kind of science with the same area, which in English is called modern reproductive technology. A technology for reproduction. Usually which involves people having trouble for one reason or other conceiving a child, and the child is then semen is taken from a man the usual way, and some procedure for taking eggs out of the woman, and they're put together in a little glass dish, petri dish, I call it, and put together. So that's where conception takes place, in a laboratory with somebody with a microscope, white jacket, watching the whole thing. And then they take some, and the egg and the sperm have united, they take one, and then again put it in the womb of the mother. This is what usually meant by it. But of course, people also want to produce better offspring. And of course, now it's coming with genetic engineering, like we now do with food and animals now, genetically engineering. It has already occurred to people that when you do like this, you have a chance also, while you're dealing in the laboratory with this dish, that you can get in there and you can change the do a little surgery on the genetic code of the baby that's being produced, and people already see the future. We're back to trying to produce Übermenschen. First of all, we'll get rid of this disease or that disease, but then, maybe we can make things a little better, and you watch what's it. What people are thinking, because the idea, really the idea behind reproduction, and I think it's a very natural idea, is somehow the children we should produce should be better. Somehow the children we produce should be better. Even in human affairs, a young couple falls in love. So when you fall in love with somebody, it means that you idealize the other. The man looks at the woman and she seems... To other people she may just see another woman, but to him somehow or other something happens and she's... the eternal femininity, it's like embodiment of all that's wonderful. And the wife looks at the man and somehow is like their greatest, good qualities of masculinity, the ideal male. So they idealize each other this way. This is what falling in love means. It's something of a delusion. And then they want to unite, and they think really what goes on, maybe not consciously, but sometimes consciously, that we will produce a child that somehow the union of those two ideal selves, that we come together in this child, that's the ideal child. So this is, I think, psychologically what happens. And parents want their children to succeed. They want them to be better than they are. And of course, then there comes the notion of some kind of human progress. We are making progress over time. We become better and better and better. And of course then in the 19th century in Europe, with there was the idea that actually there is this progress, we call it evolution, and it happens by natural selection. And there was the survival of the fittest, so that by this reproduction, it causes progress. That there's improvement of the race, improvement of the population over the course of time, and that this was naturally happening. This was the idea in the 19th century. They thought that the white Europeans were obviously superior to everybody else, having evolved further, and naturally this would go on, and the human race would also, either mention end up as a natural process, and then maybe we should help it along a little bit by what in the 1920s all over Europe and America was the so-called science of eugenics. And this involved things like deciding certain people are unfit to have children, mentally ill people, other people, and so they would be somehow or other prevented from having children. Many of this was taken to quite some extreme in certain part of the countries, certain part of the world, including Germany. This all in the name of improvement of the species, how to have better and better, scientifically better and better children. Then, of course, after everybody saw where that ended up, we put that aside, but now I'm telling you it's coming back again in the modern science of reproduction with the test tube and the petri dish and the genetic engineering. Again, that idea is inescapably there that somehow or other we can improve the humanity somehow through the science of reproduction. So we must show people the real way. Because actually the alternative ways are all going to end in disaster when this is trying to be done, where people don't know what they're doing, and on a purely material basis. So here it is, that Prabhupada refers to this science. And I have some places where Prabhupada talks about this. I happen to have collected this together for some. Because he mentions here the Vedic ritual called Garbhadhana Samskara, very important, he says, for generating good population. And so Prabhupada says like this. Here's a text. From Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.13, the translation is, those who have been reformed by Garbhadhana ceremony and other prescribed reformatory methods performed with Vedic mantras without interruption and who have been approved by Lord Brahma are bijas or twice born. Such brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas. You see, the actual meaning of dvija, those who go this, are not just brahmanas. Actually, brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas are considered dvija in a broad sense of the term. Such brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas, purified by their family traditions and by their behavior, should worship the Lord, study the Vedas, give charity. In this system, they should follow the principles of the four ashrams. Prabhupada's purport. This is Narada Muni describing these principles of the four ashrams. Prabhupada says, a human being must be trained in the above mentioned 30 qualities. Narada Muni has listed the 30 qualities, good qualities of a human. Otherwise, he's not even a human being. Then among such qualified persons, the Varnashram process should be introduced. In the Varnashram system, the first ceremony for purification is Garbhadhana, which is performed with mantras at the time for sex for propagating a good child. So the form in which Prabhupada gave us to this, he said that in household or life, sex is only for propagating of children. But that propagation of children means gabadhanas, samskara, should be performed. And that means that a couple who wants to beget a child do not do so until it looks like a woman is time to conceive. And then both husband and wife first chant 50 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra, 50 rounds of japa. And then, with that mentality, have sex in order to gain a child. This is called garbhadhana samskara, as Prabhupada gave it to us. So that's why it's performed with mantras at the time of sex, propagating the good child. One who uses sex life not for sensual pleasure, but only to beget children according to the reformatory method, is also accepted as a brahmachari. So Prabhupada talks a number of places of the household of brahmachari. He mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that actually spiritual discipline or yoga, requirement of brahmachari is there. So, but in the bhakti yoga system, because of its power, it allows for the householder brahmacharis, the grahastha brahmacharis. So this is also brahmacharya. One should not waste semen. Here's this word of wasting semen, this phrase, waste semen. One should invest semen. One should not waste semen on sensual pleasure, violating the principles of Vedic life. Restraint in sex is possible, however, only when the population is trained in the above mentioned 30 qualities. In other words, the whole population has to be trained to be fairly elevated. Otherwise, it is not possible. And we see how difficult sexual restraint is today. No wonder. how people are trained. Even if one is born in a family of dvijas or twice born, if they have not followed the reformatory process, he is called dvija bandhu. Not one of the twice born, but a friend of the twice born. You might say a relative of the twice born. The whole purpose of this system is to create good population. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, when women are polluted, the populace is Varna Shankara. And when Varna Shankara population increases, the situation of the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, all the Vedic literature strongly warn against creation of Varna Shankara population. When there is Varna Shankara population, the people cannot be properly controlled for peace and prosperity, regardless of great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and similar bodies. You can pass all the laws you want, but still there will not be peace or prosperity. People will be lawless, and so on. Anyway, there's many places where Prabhupada talks like this. The reason that Kali Yuga increases is the increase in this kind of population. In spite of all theories of evolution, eugenics, and whatever else, or improvement or progress, it's actually devolution, because the quality of human beings is decreasing. We see this everywhere. Although technology becomes more powerful, The people into whose hand we put this power are becoming more and more degraded. It's a very dangerous situation. Very dangerous. It's terrifying. Some picture you've seen in the newspaper is one of these child soldiers from Africa. You know, some 10-year-old boy. Kind of with his eyes wide because of drugs, you know, with an AK-47. You know, it's just to meet somebody like that on the street anywhere. This little kid out of his mind with drugs, and all he has to do is pull the trigger and, you know, you're dead. Oh. To me, that's an emblem of what it's going to be like. And a child who was, you know, brought up in the most terrible conditions of life, begotten things, and now he has this machine gun, this automatic rifle, AK-47, which are being churned out, you know, all over the world in huge numbers. These people will increase, if not literally like that in some way or another. It's because this is Kali Yuga. So I think that we should take Prabhupada's directions very seriously. Prabhupada mentioned his goal of presenting Bhagavatam as a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. So this means this re-spiritualization of sex, and something that has to be done to counteract the increase in Varna Shankara, degraded population. So this is, we have the science. We have the science, and this should really be the calling of the Grahastha ashram, that they be dedicated to this. This is very important. That we actually have this chance to produce elevated children. Like, as he Prabhupada says here, like Madhura Vyas Maitreya. So this begins here. So actually, we should think of the household or ashram as a serious matter. Sex not for fun, but is the beginning of the long-term bhakti program. We have trouble in our bhakti program. Every bhakti leader knows. You get some young people that are already, you know, 20 years old, and there have been already so many bad things right in there. Because in the modern world, by the time you're 20, you're exposed to so many terrible things. And parents who have children, even try to protect them, they can't do it. There's almost no protection. So by the time we get somebody by the age of even 18 or 20 there, damaged in so many ways, and we have to spend so much effort to clean out the bad habits that have been acquired from their youth. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has this sentence in one of his books, the Bhagavata. He says, how hard it is to get rid of bad habits acquired in one's youth. So what if people don't acquire the bad habits to begin with? You know, then, whew, that's a really... So the earlier we start, the better. And we discover we can start at the time of conception. That's where it really begins. So this is the fact that the mentality of the parents at the time of conception has a great influence on the quality of the child that is born. Normally, sex life takes place at least in the mode of passion. And more, of course, in the mode of ignorance, as people do these things. So when people have sex, Well, first of all, they go out on the town, they go to the clubs, they take alcohol and other drugs. They get themselves excited by watching pornography and things like that. So they really in a terrible state of consciousness. Then they have sex, and oops, the condom broke or whatever. And now there's a pregnancy, that accidental product of their sex. What do we do? And if somehow or other it doesn't get killed in the womb, then the child comes out and usually spends the rest of life just causing trouble for other people. Filling up jails, prison houses, mental hospitals, and the burden on the social welfare system. And even if they acquire some means of livelihood, their quality is so bad that it just creates difficulty. This is not the way to have children. And unfortunately, as things are getting worse and worse and worse. So here we have to take it very seriously. Who is going to counteract this? That if householders in ISKCON can seriously devote themselves to producing a next generation of elevated devotees, then of course one devotee is equal to hundreds of thousands of degraded people and can do so much to counteract this. So even if the numbers are not that great, still it can do so much. Because they're being empowered by Krishna. So this means that first of all, not having sex in the household or ashram, unless one wants to not have a child. Of course, those of us who are married know about the difficulty of being restrained under those circumstances. We're not always successful, but we should keep this as the aim of mine, because then we can properly form Gavardhanana Samskara. Sex is fun. It feels good. No doubt about it. And that doesn't mean we can't do it. Just like eating food tastes good. We do that still in Krishna consciousness, but we eat Krishna prasad. We don't eat ordinary food. And in spite of our satisfying the sense of taste, we do not become entangled. If we eat food that is prepared for sense gratification, with every bite we get deeper entangled in material nature. But if we eat food that's been offered to Krishna, we do not become entangled. So we know that in material life, the effect of sex, which is done for pleasure, is that almost more than any other activity, it increases our identification with the material body. It is very hard if we are engaging in any in sense gratification, but especially sex, to have any realized knowledge whatsoever that I'm not the body. When sexual pleasure takes over the body, you're seeming it in, you know. your false ego increases more and more. I'm joy. And if we make some advancement in Krishna consciousness and we fall down into illicit sex, suddenly it seems like all our realization is just erased off the blackboard. It just disappears. It's not possible. But when actually sex is performed according to the rules of Gavardhanana Samskara, it does not happen. It is not degrading. It is not mild. Any more than eating a nice piece of Krishna prasadam gets us on the bodily platform. So, then the other thing is, from the sex, a child is born, and it's extraordinary in a way that the act of sex, you know, 10-15 minutes at most, maybe, of things that people do for fun, but the result of that 15 minutes of pleasure turns out to be a human being, and a human being goes through a whole life. The fact is that what happens during the time of conception really has a big effect on that life. And if your parents and you have children, and naturally you want them to be better, you want them to be happy, you want them to have all good qualities, you want to protect them in so many ways, you want from adverse experiences, and you want them to be devotees, you want them to be good devotees, you want them to be better devotees, you want them to save us from going to the hell known as Pooch, right? That's what they're supposed to do. And so to have some discipline in the beginning of child for that few minutes with such huge consequences is really worth it. It's really worth it. We will be more than rewarded for restraint and care in this matter. And the suffering that a child who runs into difficulty in life puts their parents through is one of the worst things you can go through. I've never had really terrible things happen, but I know parents. I know one person whose son is in jail for murder. I know both the parents. Their son is in jail for murder. What they go through is just unimaginable. You know, they suffer every day. They wake up suffering. They go to bed suffering. For years and years and years. It's really worth it to have good children and do everything in our power. You can't always control everything, but everything in our power to do that. Just from the point of view of family happiness, it's worth it. But the main thing is Prabhupada really wanted us. A culture of Krishna consciousness. If you take a course in anthropology, in the very beginning they defined culture in that sense, the anthropological sense of culture. When anthropologists study human culture, as that which is passed on from one generation to the next. And if there's going to be a culture of Krishna consciousness, it survives from one generation to the next. And so in this matter, we have to be, for a culture, Krishna consciousness has to be not just one thing for a few little bit of time in history, but for a living culture that goes on generation after generation after generation. Obviously, in the big, we have not done as well as we want in this matter. But no need to be discouraged by this. We still have, still continuing the Krishna consciousness movement. But this now has to be taken very seriously. So it's a very heavy obligation. And it's And it's when household life becomes as good as brahmacharya. You know that there's that famous quotation where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that if he could get pure devotees, he wouldn't mind having hundreds of children. So it's not at all something that's degraded or fallen. It's a very high calling, and it requires that one be disciplined and serious. But in conclusion, it is very well worth it. Any questions, comments? What is that again?
Isn't that not more to it? Like you have this Sabadana Sankara, which is done in one day, but like the whole consciousness of the couple, like, I mean, you have your spiritual life before and after, and especially when the child is born, if you neglect it and if you still spoil everything.
Yeah, correct. As I said, Sabadana Sankara is a shreyabhut. But at the same time, for example, you cannot expect to be not serious for so many years that we're going to have a child, and then all of a sudden on one day we're going to become Krishna conscious. This will not work. So, and to have the elevated consciousness at the time of sex, it requires a consistent practice of Krishna consciousness. And then also, when the child is growing in the womb, what is the mother eating? What is the mother listening to? These are also, it's not that the child is in a black box, nothing goes in. Lots of stuff goes in. They used to tell us that, you know, that when I was a kid, I mean, the idea was that the child was completely sort of walled off from anything. Another, you know, scientific fact that turned out to be an unfact. But not. First of all, the child's mother's emotions influence the child. Children hear what people are talking. They hear the music that's going on. I mean, it's not at all fanciful that Narada Muni could understand. I mean, that Prahlad could understand the instructions of Narada Muni in the womb. I mean, that's a really advanced child, but the fact that something comes through is not at all wrong. And so what used to be a superstition is now understood by just a little bit of advancement in knowledge. And then raising the child, shoot, that's a whole other thing. And the child should be in an ashram, grahastha ashram. Ashram means a place for spiritual development, and particularly the spiritual development of the new bhaktis. So yeah, that's right. It's a good point. Anything else? Yes.
My question was that, you know, I sometimes, you know, miss in these discussions about Gaudana Sanskara that kids has to be also raised with love and affection. And, you know, that not just like my ashram, it sounds more like, you know, like a hard nut.
Okay. I'm sorry, that's our idea of ashram too, you know. That is no love and affection. Oh yeah, yeah. That's true. Children. Prabhupada gave very good instructions for children, and he said, you know, for the first to the age of six, he said, spoil them. That doesn't mean you let them do anything they want, but it means that you give them full love and affection. Especially at that time, the children really need it. They just need to be loved, and they need to know they're loved. Unfortunately, the conditions of modern life, even if the parents love the children, sometimes they're not able to let them know that they're loved, because absence of parents is experienced by the child as lack of love. So mother has to work, father has to work, and the children are, you know, sent out to some creche or nursery or something, you know. Not the same thing. So they need, then if the, you know, age of six, discipline begins. And it's because it's time to go to school, and but if that solid foundation of love is there, then they will be emotionally secure and happy people their whole lives. That's a fact. It's a great aspect. Prabhupada mentioned somewhere now how Krishna and Balaram had the blessings of a loving mother. And Prabhupada remarked, this is very much important. The father is the protector, and the mother is the nurturer. So, maybe people want to get rid of these roles, but ultimately, women are the best people to be mothers, and men are the best people to be fathers, and be protectors, and the mothers, the nurturers. They have natural qualities which are made for these roles, and we should do that. So when we say ashram for raising children, it doesn't mean that you should have some idea of English boarding school in the 19th century, or the stick and the whip and the, these places, or what sometimes Brahmacharya or Brahmacini ashrams have been like in the Hare Krishna movement. It's not military training to become commando or something. It's Krishna consciousness. Thank you. Anything else? No? Questions? Yeah.
We have not been raised in this way in Gaudiya
Sanskrit. Yeah, true.
Full of material desires. And one Peter Prabhupada says one can use all bad qualities in Krishna's service. So how to engage this material lust and without, not accept Gaudiya Sanskrit in Krishna's service?
When Prabhupada says you can use all bad qualities in Krishna's service, we have to be clear about what this means. It doesn't mean. Prabhupada said in a letter, he says one cannot dovetail sense gratification. In other words, sense gratification means I am the enjoyer, so I enjoy first, then I offer to Krishna. That's not offering a bad, using a bad quality in Krishna's service. Krishna's service means you're connected with Krishna. Krishna's service means you are doing something for the satisfaction of Krishna. So by this, we have seen that desire, kama, can be used in Krishna's service when Krishna is the object of that desire. Or, as we are talking about in Gaudiya Sanskara, which is to produce for Krishna's pleasure a devotee. Again, that's the goal, is to sort of satisfy Krishna. Then it can be used in Krishna's service. Anger can be used in Krishna's service. We have examples, Hanuman, the one who used anger in Krishna's. We have seen Prabhupada angry. The devotees saw him once in a Pandal program in India, where the devotees were dancing on stage and people in the audience were actually attacking the devotees. And Prabhupada was using his kartals on the string, sort of like a chakra, going to these people who tried to attack the devotees. So anger has its place in Krishna consciousness. So that's, I believe, what he means in these things. As far as the other bad qualities that we have acquired from not being born properly and raised to be vicious, those we have to try to treat appropriately with the Hare Krishna mantra. Because although some of these things are very severe, we understand that the power of Krishna consciousness is not that all the bad qualities we have acquired from culture and habit will be taken care of. Our culture is such that, for example, when I was a little child, my mother fed me meat. Like many little children, I didn't like to eat it, and she used to have to disguise it and mix it with other things, so I would be deceived into eating meat. She thought she was doing something good for me. She thought that if I didn't eat meat, I would die, or would not grow and be strong and healthy. This is the culture. The culture tells us that bad things are good and good things are bad. So there are cultures like this. They're listed in the Bhagavatam. Kirata, Hunandra, Pulinda, Pukta, Sha, Abhira, Shumba, Yovana, Sharaya. And even those, Yenye, Shapapa, and those are even more sinful. But people from all these groups, they can be delivered. It says by taking shelter of one who has taken shelter of Krishna. Because of the power of Krishna. So, those of us from the West, we're in that list. the purport to that verse in the second canto of Prabhupada talks about the Hunas and the Germans and so on. It covers practically everybody. That verse is practically the charter verse for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And in the purport, Prabhupada talks that for saving these people, we have started this organization named ISKCON. So it's not impossible. Like anything, you know, when you have a pot to clean and the pot is very dirty, then we have to scrub harder and maybe a little longer. But if we don't quit, and if we stay with it, then the purification will take place. Yeah.
That for the Bhagavatam Sanskar, there are also, you find the Vaishnava books and home pages, to find other instructions, like from the astrological point of view, there's not only this chanting, but other details you can do to improve even more the consciousness. And then on the other side, I heard devotees say that anyway, it's Krishna's mercy and he will send us what is good, and we are his devotees. And so what can you say to this kind of opinion?
What, which, the second one?
Yeah, the second, because I was like, more, yeah.
No, you can say, okay, Krishna's so merciful, if I don't follow the regular principle, I don't chant my rounds, yet Krishna will save me because he's so merciful. No, it doesn't exactly work like that. We have to show Krishna that we are interested. Krishna does save us, but there's something that's required on our side.
But we are not the controller.
He is controller, but we have to ask him. Because there is some freedom. And that freedom is, we can turn toward Krishna or we can turn away. That Krishna does not control. When I turn to him, he controls it, that he gives me the facilities to go to him. When I turn away from him, he's the controller because he gives me the facility to turn away. But the decision itself, that is not Krishna's decision, that's my decision. And that's the meaning of freedom, of free will. Is that clear?
Huh?
Yeah. So people should simply understand this, that I Yetam mampa pajite tams the type of the jamya. To the whatever they surrender to me, they worship me. Krishna says, I worship them back. And as much as they, I do them. He reciprocates. So we have some freedom, and that freedom is that we can be controlled either by Krishna's internal potency or his external potency. If we choose the external potency, if we choose to be controlled by Krishna's external potency, how will we be controlled by his internal potency? Do you think Krishna's going to grab to take us? Do you think I could make a devotee by kidnapping somebody off of the street, bringing him to the temple, and at the point of a gun, forcing them to chant Hare Krishna, forcing them to worship the deity, forcing them to take prasad, locking them up at night so they don't, will that convert them? Will that change them? You cannot be for it. You know, the internal potency has to be accepted voluntarily. It has to be the change of heart. And so when I at least have to turn toward Krishna and show Krishna to some extent that I am serious. Yeah?
My question is like, similar like her is like, I saw a case when a couple made astrological calculation what would be the best time for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then Guru said, well, let's not do it this time, let's do it other time. Because anyway, he said, we are beyond all this.
Well, that was the first part of the question, yeah.
But does it work, or like, we could count on that?
Okay.
Like Guru says.
Yeah. Here's, we see, although there are many samskaras and all these different rituals, this is the one Prabhupada talked about. He did not really concern himself so much with the others. He mentioned them, he acknowledged them. He's not against them, but this is the... Yeah, this is the place. That's the one that he recommended. And I've seen books on Garbhadhana Samskara where you can do all kinds of ceremonies and things if you really like to do it. And if it helps, alright. Well, it helps what? Make the mind fixed on Krishna. The point of these samskaras is to fix the mind on Krishna. As far as astrology goes, we see that Prabhupada did not really put that much. He didn't put any emphasis on it, actually. He did weddings, whenever there was time to do weddings. Well, Prabhupada had a secretary who really would get into all this kind of stuff and all of it, this Vedic stuff. Prabhupada called him an American smarta. And at one point he was following some book that had the auspicious and inauspicious times for anything to be done, and he was really into this book. And Prabhupada said, if I followed this, I'd never get anything done. When they came to astrology, Prabhupada knew his chart. He talked about it occasionally. When he was there was astrologers coming about his health and in his final days, And I remember one point there was an astrologer wanting to do something and wanted to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, okay, let's have some fun. So he did it, but he really didn't take it so seriously. So I think astrology has its uses. If you can do things by it, in the house, good. But we do depend upon Krishna. Prabhupada didn't think of it. He had to wait to get astrologers before he could conduct the Hare Krishna movement. He opened temples, installed deities. He didn't look to see whether they're auspicious or inauspicious days. He just did it. for the service of Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj is described in the Bhagavatam as Krishna Grahavriti Dhatma. For him, he is under the strong astrological influence of Krishna. Graha means one of the planets that influence things. So Prahlad is Krishna Graha. So when you become a devotee, there is another planet on your chart that maybe the astrologers can't see. That's the Krishna planet. And that Krishna planet makes if you're a sincere and serious devotee, even inauspicious things work auspiciously. So that's the other consideration. Yeah.
But if people are not, like, if you marry a couple and they have bad charts and it's not, you know, if they are pure devotees, they don't matter. They can, they are on the Krishna level, they live together in Krishna, but not everyone is. So isn't astrology?
Well, Prabhupada did it for his disciples who weren't pure devotees. So I don't think you have to be a pure devotee. I think you have to be a human being. All right, that's pretty elevated. We know that. So fine, I think for arranging marriages, I think it's a very good system. Yeah. If you have astrologers that know what they're doing, that's another thing. Astrologers. And this is a very technical thing, and I know a number of astrologers in ISKCON who have a big, big business, but I wouldn't ask them to wave in the next corner myself. Others, I would. So always, there's risk in anything. Always depend upon Krishna. The karmic, penalty for an astrologer that makes a mistake is heavy. It's very heavy. It's very, very heavy. I think of these, why these astrologers don't take this more seriously. Because just imagine, you make a mistake and the whole business is started on the wrong day, But it's true, this is all karma kanda considerations. And so one should not come under the control of them. If it's useful and it's helpful, fine. But if it's not possible, don't give up on life. Okay, so we're past some time. Let's stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.